Tell your mom I love her and promise me you'll look after her. I tried to stop him. Dad, don't say that. Look at you. You're more alert today. The meds are working. The oxygen's helping. Don't talk like that. But he was stubborn. He had to get it out. He said, don't worry about somewhere to live. I spoke to your sister and brothers. They won't turf you out when we're gone, and you have nowhere else. That was too much. He quieted down, exhausted, drifting in and out of sleep while I sat there beside him. I didn't move, didn't make a sound. I just held on. The visitors all left. The lights dimmed. It got so quiet you could hear the soft hum of the machines and the slow hiss of the oxygen. When I finally rose to go, he woke enough to squeeze my hand weakly, not wanting to let me leave. By 11 p.m., the nurses came, gentle but firm, telling me visiting hours were over. Go home, love. Get some sleep. Come back tomorrow. I kissed him on the forehead. I'll see you tomorrow morning, Dad. I love you. He was drugged, half asleep, but I saw the corners of his mouth twitch. I turned and walked out of that ward, fighting the urge to look back, because I didn't want him to see the tears in my eyes. I got home late that night. It was cold, the kind of damp English chill that seeps straight into your bones. I remember standing in the hallway for a second, listening to the silence, hearing nothing but my own heartbeat pounding in my ears. I realized I hadn't eaten all day. Me, the man who could always eat, even when I was sick, even when I was miserable. Food was my comfort, my anchor. But that night, I couldn't even look at it. My stomach was twisted in knots. All I could think about was him lying there with that mask on his face, gasping for breath like a fish out of water, grabbing my hand with those skeletal fingers and begging me not to leave. Telling me to look after Mum, making me promise. I forced myself to go upstairs. Made up my mind I'd get up early and go straight back in the morning. I told myself, if I shower now, I can just get up and go. So that's what I did. Stripped off, turned on the hot water, let it burn my skin, trying to scrub off the smell of hospitals, of antiseptic, of fear. I tried to convince myself it was going to be fine, that he'd fight it off the way he always had. By 1 a.m., I was in bed, staring at the ceiling in the dark, my head full of ghosts and memories. I could still hear his voice rasping, "Tell your mom I love her." I don't even know when I fell asleep. But I hadn't been out long when the phone rang. It jolted me upright. The screen lit up with the hospital number. My heart sank. I picked up and heard the voice of the night nurse on duty. Calm, measured, detached in that clinical way they always are. "Your dad is calling out for you," he said. "He wants to see you." For a second I was frozen. Then I snapped out of it. "Tell him to try and sleep," I said. "Tell him I've just gone to bed myself. I'm knackered. I'll be there first thing in the morning." There was a pause. I asked the question I was dreading. "Do you think I should come in now? Is it that bad?" He hesitated. Then he said, "No. Don't worry, I'll tell him you're asleep. We've given him something to help him settle. By the time you got here, he'd be fast asleep anyway." I exhaled, told myself it was the right call, the logical call, and I lay back down. But I didn't really sleep. I drifted in and out, hearing his voice in my head, seeing his eyes begging me not to leave. When the phone rang again at 8:20 a.m., I jumped. I already knew. The voice on the other end didn't need to say much. Just that my father had passed away. Silence fell over me like a tomb. I sat there with the phone pressed to my ear, not moving, not breathing, just letting the words sink in like poison. Then came the panic. The heat behind my eyes. The tears I tried to choke back but couldn't. The anger. Why didn't I get up? He'd been calling for me. He'd known. The stubborn old man was right all along. He used to say, "Only I know how I'm suffering. The doctors don't know anything." And I hadn't listened. I'd failed him. Just like everything else. I staggered to my feet, blind with tears. I threw on clothes with trembling hands. My fingers wouldn't work properly. I couldn't even get the buttons right. I ran out of the house. My head pounding with one thought, I have to get to him. I have to be there. Why? What could I do? Bring him back to life? Shake him awake? Tell him I was sorry? Part of me actually believed, some desperate, delusional part, that maybe he wasn't gone. That maybe he'd just drifted off like that time years ago when he got mugged and I took him to hospital. I remembered the panic then, too. How they'd ripped off the blood-soaked bandage from his arm and he'd seen the blood, fainted dead away. How the doctors thought it was a heart attack. They scrambled, grabbed the paddles, were about to shock him back, when they realized he was snoring. "Please," I prayed, "let it be like that. Let him be snoring." I drove like a madman, cursing, begging, bargaining with whatever God might be listening. But deep down, I think I already knew that this time no one was going to wake him up.